Welcome to The Colorcast, a show about color grading, color science, and post-production. We are the Coloristos. I'm Jason Myris, a colorist and post-production engineer in Los Angeles.
And I'm Juan Salvo, a colorist, online editor, and post-production supervisor in New York City.
And I'm Josh Petok. I'm a colorist for episodic TV, reality TV, and music videos.
How about this? Light Iron is using Pablo, and I feel like I find I can spot other Pablo graded, either commercials or, you know, I would say that there is a tinge there. And with Resolve, especially, has a sort of a fundamental set of tools, but Baselite has, and Luster too as well, have a lot of tools that are popular, for instance, like the log grading and things like that. So, you know, in the way that the colors and things like that are stretched, you find that if you're just doing lift gamma gain versus using, you know, an exposure and a pivot and stuff like that, you'll get a little bit of a different result out of it. And I was learning that for the first time when I had an opportunity to try Luster. I found that as compared to Resolve, Luster sort of was giving me a different result just based on what was available. And even the workflow that's implied in the interface, you know, Luster has a very left to right, and in Resolve does too. But what I would say is I was sort of following the steps as they seemed to be intended. And I was getting this very interesting result with some material that I had graded a lot before, a lot of the Resolve test footage actually. But maybe I'm the only one. I'll accept that.
No, that's interesting. I mean, that's one of the things that's like a big improvement in V9 is they've added the logarithmic grading tools. And that maybe that's part of the thinking. I mean, to me, I think there's probably an element of that. But then all of these tools give you such, with the exception of maybe the really low-end tools, they give you such fine control that, you know, you can basically do anything you want. And it just really comes down to what your style is or what do you want to do. I think what may be more of a factor is the colorists that are drawn to particular tools are drawn to those tools because they get the kind of results that they want easier. Mm. So, you know, something that, you know, in, like, for example, the logarithmic grading tools, you know, that's built right into Baselite. It's already in Baselite. So somebody who's inclined to think that way or inclined to approach a grade that way is going to gravitate towards Baselite. Whereas if you were trying to do that with version 8 of Resolve, you would have to do it with, to get that look, you would have to do it with a combination of the lift gamma gain grade and also like something with curves, right? Mm-hmm. You'd have to kind of manipulate or force that kind of a result out, and it would take a little bit more finessing and a little more work. So I think maybe if you're drawn to that kind of a grade, you're going to be drawn to that kind of tool.
Yeah.
Do you think you grade differently with a panel or without a panel?
Yeah. And somebody pointed out, like when you're doing really fine grading, it's sometimes even better to not use a panel. And so there are some very well-known colorists who will actually take the panel out of the room. And I mean, if you think about it, like if you look at, like the old printer lights process, like if that was all, you know, numbers, like you were basically just doing, you know, a adjustment on the intensity of the light, literally on a film printer, and getting results that way, and doing it based on, you know, based on something you inferred from the way you saw the footage, right? If you imagine like how complicated that would be, you know, we have a hard time grading when we don't have instantaneous feedback on the panels now, right? Can you imagine grading where you're basically looking at a shot going, okay, we need to lower the blues this much, we need to raise the reds this much, like just based on what you're seeing without any actual feedback until you process it and then look at it, you know what I mean? It's insanely complicated. So if you're coming from that kind of background and you're used to just dealing with the numbers of, you know, minus this much on the blues, minus that much on the greens, I think the panels just seem kind of to get in the way.
So is that the thought for you, is that you actually don't need panels as much as others might?
Oh, for me personally, no, I definitely need the panels.
You like panels, okay.
I'm not against panels at all. I'm just, you know, I think that if you're a colorist coming from that background, I didn't work with printer lights ever. So, I mean, other than, you know, as an adjustment in a color system in Final Touch or in color, you know, if you're coming from that background, I think you're going to approach it a little bit differently. And at that point, it just becomes a numbers game, right?
Yeah, yeah. How about you, Josh? Are you a huge fan of panels at all costs?
Well, I mean, in my day job, what I'm usually doing is working on a symphony. And, you know, the panel implementation on that is not great. So I have my own custom thing that you've seen me use, which is just basically like Wacom tablet that's programmed in specific ways, along with what I'm calling the nudge knob, which is just the Griffin PowerMate that I'm able to use curves and kind of move things around using the nudge knob to kind of get things dialed in exactly how I want them. I mean, a lot of that is just workarounds to make Symphony do what I want it to do. But it works for me.
Well, that brings up an interesting point, because I think it brings it back around to Baselite, actually, because one of the ideas, I think, with Baselite editions is to make grading in Avid a lot more robust. Is that a workflow that... Because I think, you know, if you look at the whole point of Symphony is just to have a media composer with kind of slightly better... to somewhere between slightly better to significantly better color grading tools. But wouldn't you be able to just have the Baselite plugin in a media composer system now give you really, really similar capabilities and even better capabilities with similar performance?
There's two main things that are missing. Well, actually, there's three main things that are missing. One is there's no color relationships in Symphony that you can color by, like, tape or source clip name or master clip.
Would you be able to do something like you can with Resolve and sort of rearrange the sequence and source mode?
You can, but then, like, the way the plugin works, it just is you have to reapply it to everything manually. There's no relationship between the clips or anything like that. So, like, with Symphony, for instance, I have a sequence and I've completely colored it, and they go, oh, well, we just recut that show, or we did a promo, or we did something else. I can load up one sequence and just say, merge the color from this sequence into this sequence, and then everything is pretty much done. If I was using the plugin, I might have to go, oh, well, this was camera A, let's find those and, like, apply them to each spot. So, I don't know if that's something that they're developing, if they, you know, have an idea like, oh yeah, let's try to dig into that Symphony stuff more. But
I think what you're touching on too is a big, big part of grading that a lot of people who say just do compositing work and think of things on a shot by shot basis don't quite realize, is that, man, the management is such a big part of it, especially with regard to sanity and speed, you know, right, which are big. So for instance, a similar situation is happening with Smoke on Mac. It's got, you know, the color corrector and the color warper, and a lot of people are really content with those tools. But if you take a look at it from a colorist perspective, you know, the big requests would be, you know, we need some grade management. We need a way to have some sort of either tray or a still store where we can copy and paste things quickly. And we need to be able to maybe ripple changes and stuff like that. But that's sort of project wide. And a lot of people never deal with color correction on a project wide basis. And so what you're kind of talking about, Josh, is the idea that, you know, you're kind of confined on a clip by clip. Baselite plugin's wonderful, but then as soon as you got to ripple something across the whole show, you're in a tough spot.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, that also kind of leads back to Smoke's pedigree as kind of a short-form finisher.
Definitely,
yeah. Long-form, totally. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, beyond that, you know, the Smoke has some serious drawbacks as a color correction system, just in terms of, like, you know, applying a power window or a mat to something or tracking a mat.
The
you know,
other big request, God, like, please, like, quick application of shapes. And if you see how they do it, you know, I guess you've got to apply a mask in the node tree to even go near that.
Yeah, you've basically got to go through, create a generator, adjust the, like, you're basically creating a high con mat and then adjusting the settings on that mat and then feeding that in through a node tree into the color corrector
and
applying it. And it's like, you know, it's 14 steps for something that in a dedicated grading app would be 2 or 3 steps.
Yeah, I just learned that last night and I was sitting there, I was like, oh my Lord. And so that's the big thing is, you know, is if they don't add those things, you're right. It can't be, you know, it won't have the speed required even for short form, you know, at least as far as color goes.
Well, I mean, there's plenty of stuff that's getting done in short form and those things. I mean, it's if you're only dealing with like, 10 shots, I don't think it's not necessarily that big a deal to have those extra steps. I mean, generally, I do commercial work. I do spot work that ends up going into Smoke. And generally what we'll do is basically do a grade pass before it goes to the online pass, before it goes into Smoke.
Right.
So we actually grade before they conform.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's what a lot of the original use for Smoke was, you know, is the very, very final.
Right. And then at that point, it's just, you know, if you need to adjust a grade, it's not that big a deal to just tweak it a little bit if you have to.
What about the idea, Juan, of lots of smokes handing off in a sort of a base light additions to base light, like lots of smokes handing off to flame? Flame would do a lot of the complex work, but the smokes would be prepping stations or finishing stations for flame.
I mean, clearly that's not the market for Autodesk, because if that was the case, they'd continue to charge $14,000 for it instead of $3,500.
You know what? Yeah, that's true.
They're just not going to sell that many units to those guys. You know, like any shop that's doing that, maybe they need two of those stations, maybe three of those stations, but they're not going to be buying a dozen of those stations. They're really hoping to sell mass market. And so those guys aren't going to have access to a flame.
You know, what's interesting is there was some marketing data that the AD guys were able to, you know, sort of post about on the area forums. And it was interesting to see from their perspective, the idea that they had thousands of downloads of smoke, but just not many people buying the application. And so what do you guys think? I mean, you know, what's interesting is we've got, you know, Lift Gamma Gain and other places where colorists converge. And, you know, it seems like it's still a pretty small community. I mean, what do you think the overall market for something like smoke would even be? I mean, is it several hundred people, or do you think it's even into the thousands?
That's a good question. I think everybody's kind of asking, like, who is this product really supposed to be for? If they're adding all of these basically like offline features into it, then, you know, who is supposed to be buying this? Like, what would they be making with this?
Yeah.
I guess, can't think of any editors that would be buying it. You know what I mean?
If they can make the editing tools good enough, I don't think it'll replace, you know, Avid or Final Cut or Premiere as, you know, thoroughbred editors. But the thing is that, are there going to be people that say use it as an editor initially and then creep into things like ConnectFX? Or are people just going to look at it as being too expensive if they're not going to use the entire thing all the way, you know?
I mean, I think that's what they're hoping for, is like, and that's part of the thinking, is like, have a less steep learning curve, you know, have the NLE portion be the thing that you jump right into, as opposed to before you used to jump into the desktop and then you had to go into the NLE environment.
Right.
So now they've set it up so you're jumping into, after you've gone through the steps of actually setting up your project, which is a much more daunting task than it would be in another NLE.
Right.
After you've gone through that, you're in an editing environment. It's a really familiar editing environment with sort of familiar functionality, familiar interface. And even like, you know, adding some basic effects stuff is straightforward and is available from the timeline. So you can do some DVE compositing right in the timeline. You can do some color effects right in the timeline. So there's a lot of functionality that's right in the time that exists in the timeline without having to go through a node environment, without having to go through, you know, multiple steps of action effects and connect effects and going through multiple rooms, the way you used to have to go through, in the interface. So, I mean, obviously their target is people who would be cutting and finishing in one box, right?
Yeah.
The all in one market.
I mean, don't you think that would be like education or corporate video or industrials or something like that? Or because that's, I mean, all in one kind of, that's what it says to me.
Sure. And then there's, you know, if you, I don't know if you guys know this, but like Apple uses Smoke for all their in-house videos.
I did not know that. That's interesting.
So but they also use Resolve, but what they do is they cut in Final Cut, I guess Final Cut X now, Final Cut 10. And then they'll go through a color pass and then they'll go into Smoke. But they've been doing that for years.
The one thing I'll say, and this is a big thing that, like, for instance, Josh, you are involved with a lot of episodic television. And then Juan, you are doing a lot of very high-end work. And then what I'm doing is I'm sort of a one-man DI for a lot of independent features. And so one of the things, like, for instance, Josh, you were saying that you thought that Smoke as an all-in-one product was going to, you know, obviously be useful for education or for corporate, industrial. The thing that I found for me is that it gives me an accessibility to things that I never had before with regard to being a one-man shop. The all-in-one nature is, you know, offers two major things for me. First of all, it does a lot of things and I'm only learning one app. And then it's also taking away the round trip, which is a lot of my time. I mean, one of the big things that I deal with are, you know, people bringing me things. And because of the fact that it's very, you know, fairly independent, a lot of these people don't have any media management. And so I am the place where a lot of that gets sussed out. The end result of that is that any place where I can save time myself, because I'm busy sort of saving the day on a lot of projects that come through the pipe, you know, these are people essentially that edit and then they hand it off to me and then I get it across the finish line the rest of the way. The reason that I like Smoke a lot is because it kind of minimizes the need to bounce around between several products. And that is a big deal when, how do I put it? A lot of times these people are giving me these projects. They'll say it'll be available on Monday, but then it's, you know, Wednesday because they're often behind. And then what'll happen is on Friday, I have to deliver it. And if I spend a lot of time, for instance, a lot of my time is spent conforming projects, getting them into Resolve. If I didn't have to go to Resolve and I could do a lot of the finishing tasks, either VFX wise or graphics wise, and also the color tasks, it would save me, let's say, 4 or 5 hours in a day, you know, and those are the appealing things for a person like me who's like a one-man facility.
But is there a trade-off now between if grading something in Smoke, for example, where it takes 14 steps or 18 steps to do a mat versus, you know, two buttons in Resolve?
You're absolutely right. But what I'll say is that is the only thing in the way. And I'm hopeful, and this is hopeful now, that those things can be, you know, figured out. So Smoke is a 80% product to me right now. If there was a way to apply shapes quickly, grade management, a way to, you know, have some sort of still stores and copy and paste. And, you know, to be honest, maybe a couple other small things, like I'm still determining a little bit what the potential for Smoke is in terms of real-time interactivity. You know, they seem to be relying heavily on rendering, and maybe you can speak to this, Juan, because there is apparently some kind of GPU, you know, and there's a GPU-enabled, you know, features, but yeah, it doesn't give you the interactivity of Resolve. So I'm kind of confused how a company as advanced as Autodesk seems to rely so heavily on a render button.
I can answer that real quick if you want.
Yeah, and so that kind of thing, you know. So
they've shifted to using OpenGL to make it compatible with a broad set of graphics cards, because in the old Smoke, the Smoke 2012, you had to have a Quadro 4000 or a Quadro 4800 in order to use it, because it did totally depend on it depended heavily on the GPU for a lot of its processing. They've shifted to more of a software, a CPU processing plus some GPU acceleration. But it's just for making it a very broadly capable, broadly compatible product in the hopes of having a much bigger audience. So they're really targeting being able to use it on an iMac, being able to use it on a MacBook Pro or MacBook Air, versus only being able to use it on a Mac Pro with a proper graphics card.
So they're using OpenGL. And I guess in a certain sense, like OpenGL, a lot of people look at that as being something that's not capable of the quality required for at least rendering. So the rendering is to get what we'll call your preview quality actually into a file at a high quality, right?
Right. That's more in line with what After Effects was using in previous versions of like their OpenGL implementation. So they were using OpenGL in order to do some like 3D compositing and sort of, and that kind of stuff. You know, you get really ugly aliasing. It's not necessarily the prettiest or most robust way of doing like 3D moves or DVE stuff. I don't think that's what Smoke's using it for. I think they're mostly using it for color processing, which is actually floating point, 32-bit. It's very clean, and it works really well. In fact, a lot of other apps use that same technique to do color processing, including Magic Bullet uses it. And
Motion is really heavily dependent on it, too.
Yes.
Apple and, Motion, yeah.
And Apple Color actually also used OpenGL color processing.
So is that going to be, a new push now to reapply OpenGL?
OpenGL is really, really useful for just strict color processing. OpenCL is a big step in that direction. And like OpenCL can work on NVIDIA cards and work on ATI cards, so it's not brand specific, which makes it really nice if you're trying to do something cross-platform or cross with a broad use space. But it does, it's not every card has OpenCL support, and there's some bugs with OpenCL support. So that's why, for example, Adobe and their new apps is using OpenCL for a lot of processing, but it, you know, you have to have a qualified card in order to enable OpenCL, or you have to hack it in, and sometimes there's problems.
And then there's this idea that OpenCL right now isn't as mature as CUDA, so your overall sort of efficiency with the processing is a lot lower per, you know, card horsepower, or whatever you want to call it.
That's probably true. But, you know, I was on the reverse, on the flip side of that, for example, just playing around with the new MacBook Retina system with the, it has an NVIDIA card, a 650M in there, which is a CUDA capable card. In Premiere, I actually found using the OpenCL engine instead of the CUDA engine gave me significantly better performance.
And is that, that's probably because Apple's championing OpenCL and doing everything they can to sort of make that better? Is that?
I think the Apple driver version one drivers of any kind of new graphics card tend to be a little underperforming, and I think their OpenCL implementation is much more mature than their Kepler chip implementation.
Yeah, because I mean, I guess ultimately Apple thinks that's the way forward, and that's where a big fight is kind of coming between people using CUDA and people using OpenCL. I actually heard the same is happening for NVIDIA, where they are slowing down their support for OpenCL in order to push CUDA harder.
I don't know if they're, I mean, all that stuff is kind of driver-based. So, like, OpenCL, the way it's engineered is very broad. So it's really meant to, I mean, it is, I think, I would champion it as a user. I think it's better to kind of have really strong OpenCL implementations across manufacturers. It means that we'd always be able to get the fastest card, you know, whatever that would be, for our devices. There are certain advantages to having the hardware maker also design the software SDK, right? Because NVIDIA can really kind of maximize the performance of their cards with that, with their CUDA implementation, and can really give you like maximum performance for their hardware. That, you know, that integrated design is really advantageous in certain ways. And so, I mean, I think that's why a lot of the high-end stuff that is using CUDA is really sticking to CUDA at this point. I don't see, you know, I don't see Blackmagic, for example, who also has an OpenCL implementation on the Mac, in order to use the ATR cards on the Mac, but that they don't have that on the PC. I don't see them really leaving CUDA behind anytime soon.
It works. You know, it gets the job done. Yeah.
Well, we're just going to wrap it up here, but thanks for joining us on the Coloristos. I'm Josh Petok. You can reach me at Josh Petok on Twitter or www.joshpetok.com.
I'm Juan Salvo. You can reach me at juansalvo.com or on Twitter. I'm at J_Salvo.
And I'm Jason Myris. You can continue the conversation until our next episode by joining all of us at liftgammagain.com, a forum for discussing all things color. See you next time, and thanks for listening.